This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, welcome to the Two Robbies podcast, your destination for in-depth discussion and analysis of the Premier League and the Champions League. I'm Robbie Musto, he's Robbie Earl, and here are today's topics. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer out after Manchester United's 4-1 defeat at Watford. What's next for United, and who will be the next manager, and what's next for Ole? Liverpool hammering Arsenal at Anfield. Christian Pulisic back on the score sheet as Chelsea go into cruise control at Leicester. Man City keeping pace with the Blues after their win over Everton. Antonio Conte gets his first Premier League win with Spurs over Marcelo Bielsa's Leeds, and successful debuts for Steven Gerrard with Villa and Dean Smith with Norwich. That's what we've got coming up in today's episode. Robbie Earl, only one place to start, my friend. And yes. I know you've been talking about it all weekend, all day today on our broadcast on NBCSN. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's out at Manchester United after a really embarrassing performance, Rob, Vicarage Road against Watford. I watched at halftime, Rob. I watched, of course, the full game. I tweeted at halftime that there's something. This is a story. This is a big story. A reaction was expected. International break. Players come back. Okay, let's regroup. Let's go again. And it was its worst United performance I've seen for many, many years. The scenes afterwards, Rob, I thought with him putting his hands up, which apparently is an apology, waving goodbye, I thought that this maybe he's going to walk away. And the kind of the official line is, I don't think it wasn't really said, Rob, as a mutual agreement. It was definitely a sacking, was it? Because I wouldn't be surprised if it's some kind of mutual thing there.
Well, I think the time between, interesting, the timeline, Rob, was that we heard just towards the end of yesterday's show that there was an emergency board meeting being called by Manchester United directors and board about Ollie's position. So we obviously knew something was happening. I've got to be honest, Rob, part of me thought, well, he'll probably get another couple of games. But I, like you, felt this one was different. A 5-0 loss to Liverpool and people walking out at half-time is bad. A 2-0 mauling by Manchester City is bad. But a 4-1 defeat away to Watford, your captain gets sent off in a 7-minute spell. Your team look not good at all. The one player who looks half decent, who gets your goals, Danny van der Beek, who you've not played for the last couple of years. Then the scene at the end with Bruno Fernandes, who I didn't like, involved in all that, like, don't blame him, blame us kind of thing. Hold on, Bruno, you've got 90 minutes to do what you need to do to save the manager's job. So don't be telling fans what they should and shouldn't be doing in that occasion. Just the whole thing, Rob, made me think, this is a bit different. And when it broke, I think we all realised the end was coming. And we knew it was going to be a difficult ending because he's held in such regard. He's a legend of the football club. He scored one of the biggest goals in the club's history. He's an icon in that region and loved by the football team and the club. But it was time, Rob. And it was the right decision. And the aftermath and what's going to happen and who's going to be in charge is all to be decided. But the right decision has been made. Ollie is out of the job. Then in all intents and purposes, he was never up to from day one.
We said that, Rob, didn't we? And to be fair, he did a lot better than I expected. He did a lot better. You know, you're starting to hear it now. Like, he stabilised the club after Jose's time. He brought some good players in. Well, yeah, I mean, not difficult to stabilise the club after Jose, really. And you've got to be doing more than just that at the club. The club did spend a lot of money and good players were signed and he probably had a part to play and that's so well done. Finishing second last year in a very unusual COVID season was credit as well. But I think majority of watchers really would identify that he never had the right attributes to manage this massive football club. And I think it's just been a painful, drawn-out realisation. And there's been some great runs, and we talked about it. And fed up with saying good United, bad United. That's no way to continue. It continued this year, Rob. And the performance against Watford, I thought the team had given up. I thought it looked broken. His words afterwards, Rob, it was hard to watch. But he was almost saying why he's got fired. The players weren't in the right frame of mind for this game. It's so obvious that this was going to happen. He only signed a new contract a few months ago, which again is crazy, though I understand reports say that just maybe only a year's salary is going to be there for his compensation of being fired. But should we move it forward, Rob, maybe target what other issues at the football club? Because I think it rolls into the same topic, Rob. You know, Ed Woodward, the structure, the director of football.
Yeah.
You know, everybody, it seems, at this club, as I said a couple of weeks ago, has been learning on the job. Solskjaer, Carrick, McKenna, even Darren Fletcher, Rob.
Johnny Murta.
Ed Woodward, and coming from a commercial manager to make football decisions. And the new guy, Richard Arnold, is another corporate finance guy.
Can I throw one thing at you, Rob? Is there a bit of almost like nepotism with Manchester United, like it's all of their own, you know? Fletcher, like all these links, is there a point where shouldn't Manchester United be going out in the world of football and getting the best people? One might be Portuguese, one might be German, one might be the best people around the world who you bring together in a team. I made a point today, and I think it's rolling into where you're going. Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was not up to the job. The only credential he had for the job, that he was a goal scoring legend in the club. And that got him the job, and that kept him in the job for 3 years, which is remarkable and well played him.
The only thing I say, Rob, I'll just quickly interject there. Yeah. He coached the reserve team, so maybe
that against Klopp and Tuchel and Pep. It doesn't even come into thing. But I hear your point. He has the Mulder, the Cardiff, whatever. But in reality, of him getting the Manchester United job, it wasn't based on a reserve team. It wasn't based on Mulder. It wasn't based on Cardiff. It was based on him being an ex-legend and him holding the fort. Okay, we've had that discussion. As we move it forward, Rob, whoever they decide to get and whoever would have been in that position, the structure of this football club is such that you're not set up for success. There's no joined-up thinking. There's no long-term view, short-term, medium. There's no vision of what's coming. Hence why Manchester United are now scrambling around. And you made a great point a couple of weeks ago about the managers who could have been available. Tuchel, Poch, Antonio Conte today, and we'll talk about Spurs and that. I mean, can you imagine? If I'm at Manchester United, I'm looking at that going, well, that's what I could have had.
I know.
From half-time onwards, the man who can sort his team out, can be on the sideline, can get a team going, can get a crowd going, can build emotion as well as all the other things and win, that's what we could have had.
It's an unfair and embarrassing comparison, Rob, today. And I know, you know, that you guys touched on it after the games were finished. I mean, talk about, you know, when we spoke the last couple of weeks, Rob, about managers that have got fire in their belly and there's a fear factor and they've champions, they're winners. Antonio Conte is a winner. A winner through and through, from a player to a manager to a national team manager. And it's like, wow, we've missed that. We have missed it. And flipping heck, he's fired up, isn't he? I mean, that's got to get through to
crazy.
The players.
He's manic.
He is manic. He's non-stop. And a lot of it is going to be for
nervous
show and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And nervous energy and all this point in directing. Yeah. No one's really listening to that point. But you've got to love his energy and getting the fans going. I thought that was, you know, it's 60,000 in there that have got, you know. Yeah, come on then. So going back to the situation at United, I worry. I did see a report, Rob, and this is maybe a little unfair. The owners are the owners. Joel Glazer apparently was going to have the last decision on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Now, does that mean he's going to? I mean, I know he's the ownership and all that, but shouldn't owners, Rob, hire and trust real football experts to make those decisions?
Absolutely.
And it is his money, the family's money. I get that.
Yeah.
But it worries me when I see that Joel Glazer, you know, ultimately made the decision on that. Is he going to have a say in the new? The structure things we've talked about for so long, Rob, it almost bores me now. The IX setup Erik ten Hag is the first team coach at Ajax. Edwin van der Sar is a director of football, to my understanding.
Yeah.
No, I'm not saying that United go out and get those pair, but is this more of a hiring of structure and find? I mean, Spurs have done it in a, you know, with Paratici and Antonio Conte worked before. I'm not saying there's a combo out there somewhere that's going to fit perfectly for United, but you know, Darren Fletcher is the technical. I just don't know where the experience is, Rob, in terms of building squads and hiring and firing and finding players.
And the vision, Rob, of what those things are. You know, this is what we're going for now. This is what... Let me chuck a name at you, Robbie Musto, that came to me today. And again, I don't know what the situation is and I don't know what contractually it looks like. Michael Edwards is leaving Liverpool. Is leaving Liverpool Football Club. Has worked with Jurgen Klopp and helped build something from 4 or 5 years ago to where we sit now. And Klopp, quite rightly, has given him a lot of credit for what's happened at that football club. How about we go and speak to
him?
That's
a brilliant shout.
How about we
That's
go to him?
That's a brilliant
say,
shout.
Come and help us build a structure to get us on the right road.
1,000,000%. Great shout.
Let me tell you what might go against him. And this is part of where we're at. Oh, he's Liverpool.
No,
calm down. It doesn't matter that he was Liverpool. He can be Man United and he can help build. But those are some of the things that happen around this football club, Rob. Hence why Ole Gunnar Solskjaer was the manager and a number of other people have got jobs. And I'm not saying that it's jobs for the boys by any means. It's disrespectful to them and what they've done in the game. But it doesn't. You don't have to have the Manchester United inverted commas that we came DNA to be... useful and helpful at that football club.
So Michael Carrick, Robbie Earle, is going to take over the next couple of games. I mean, incredibly important and difficult matches. Who knows if he's even able to do it?
Villarreal and Chelsea, isn't it? Chelsea. So he's got Unai Emery and Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, massive games.
Yeah.
So, but in terms of the future, Robin, let's throw a few names around. Obviously now, just to reiterate, they're... Michael Carrick is going to be in charge before they name an interim, and they're going to look for a full-time appointment in the summer. And obviously, this is something that they just did not see coming. So they are scrambling around a little bit. Zinedine Zidane, Rob, is out of work right now, and reports are saying that he's still to be persuaded that United is the right job for him. I don't think that's the right move at all. At all. Language difficulties, doesn't know the league. You know, I'm sure he doesn't know a ton of players in it. You're chasing these. I think that would be, and by the way, you're going to try and get him. You know, again, we've heard from the ownership that that's who they're going to try and increase the pressure to bring him in.
The reason is just on that point, Rob, and you make a good point. The reason they're chasing him is because the La Liga titles and the Champions League, because they'll see that and say, oh, that's what he's won. Yeah. But they won't look beyond that.
Right.
He's not a coach in that respect. He's a manager. So it'll be important who he brings in with him. I'm not sure he's a developer of talent. I think he's got big superstars who respect him and he's put them together. And, you know, huge credit to what he's done to win the three Champions League. But is that what United need now? Is that where United are now? It's not a natural fit. It's a big man and he's won some stuff, but he's not the right fit.
But a lot of our listeners, Rob, and viewers on YouTube or whatever, will be wanting him. And they'll be like scratching heads a little bit about what he's done, this guy. And he's an absolute legend and one of the best players that ever played the game, for sure. Right. It's just, you have got to think of fits. You have got to think of his desire. You have got to think of what he's done and what he needed to do to get the success that he had. He had brilliant players. Yeah. And yes, Ronaldo's there and Varane is there that he had at Real Madrid and won all these Champions League titles. Mm. But in terms of trying to pull this club from where it is right now, it's going to take a lot of work, a lot of planning, and maybe a longer-term thing now, Rob, isn't it, with United?
Yeah,
isn't it?
Absolutely.
I mean, it's got to be, you know, an organic, like Michael Edwards, if you could, you know, somebody to come in to direct the club on football matters. You take your time with your hiring. I guess it is the right time in the summer. It's just a long way off, Rob, isn't it? Like 12 games gone.
Well,
and
there's a lot of football to be played. There's Champions League spots up for grabs. There's top four spots up for grabs. I mean, there's talk about Laurent Blanc, possibly. Being, you know, a friendly face, somebody who's played there and can hold the fort for a little
experience.
While.
Carlos Queiroz
has been that around the world, you know, good respect to come back. Those kind of people I see. It's just another interim. It's just at this huge football club that should be getting the best, Rob, should be getting category A plus managers, and now having to do with something, and I'm still not convinced by the summer they'll actually know what they want.
Mauricio Pochettino, Rob, is probably the guy that they're thinking of for the summer, right? See out the season with PSG. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't sound like an amazing marriage there for him and that football club. That's probably what they're waiting to do. It's still. I mean, if I were a Man United fan, I'd be so frustrated given the managers that we've talked about they could have had. Yeah. Should they go out, Rob, and say to Leicester City, you know what? We want Brendan Rodgers right now. Mm-hmm. We want him to start working right now. Mm-hmm. He's the guy that we've selected. You know, name your compensation. I mean, fees are paid for players all the time.
Yeah.
Do you believe that that's something that they should do, or would you do that? Do you believe that he's the right guy for them?
Not right now for me, Rob. No, I'd have to be honest. I think in a certain degree, Brendan could play his way in, you know, in the next 6 months if he can get that Leicester team going again. But I don't know. I still think I'm not quite getting all that I want when I get Brendan. I want to go category A. I want to go toe-to-toe with Tuchel and Pep and those guys. I think Poch does that with the Manchester United on his back. I think with that badge walking in around, Poch feels like, I'm as superior as you.
Yeah, I agree. I just think, well, the money that would be available at Man United for Pochettino did such a great job, even before that, his previous club, Southampton, would be a better fit. And we both know and we've spoken to many times Brendan Rodgers and respect what he's done. It's just there's something that's not quite right in terms of the fit and just the difficult nature of that club and dealing with some big-time players that are there and will continue to go there. You've got to have some gravitas, I think, of that club. And it seems a little unfair on Brendan Rodgers, but you know, I'm just saying, like you, what my gut says.
Yeah,
I just don't think he's the right fit for a very difficult position. So lots of work for United to do, Rob. Some very difficult decisions to make.
Yeah. Ten Hag, possibly category A. Ajax, like you say, if that came with a pair with Van der Sar.
I quite like it.
Yeah.
I do, because there's an upside that we don't really know yet with him. An amazing job at Ajax, getting through the Champions League, right through to the latter stages, won the title. We know the style is great. Mm. He seems to conduct himself really well, working with young players, tactically great style of football. I do like that very much. It's just trying to make that happen. It's not going to be easy.
Final word on Ollie, just before we move on. Do we see him again in the Premier League? Do we see him again in English football? Do we see him again?
You know what? Mulder is a good fit for Ollie, and I think he would gladly go back to that football club. We won't see him in the Premier League, Rob. In my opinion, my goodness, if we see him managing in the Premier League, we might as well get these microphones and these headphones, chuck them out the window because we know nothing.
Watford's always an option. I tell you what, I don't think we'll see him in English football. Tim Howard, our buddy today, talked about maybe he thought Championship. I thought international football, Robbie Musto. Norwegian national manager, where you get a couple of players for a couple of weeks. He's got a bit of standing. He's obviously been a great player.
They want to play for him. They want to play for him. They're respected.
That might be a nice fit. And to be honest, Rob, he's a little bit out of the glare because I just felt it over the last week or two, it looks like it's affecting him. He looked an emotional wreck, didn't he?
Yeah, just uncomfortable. Yeah. But fair play. I mean, he's stuck in that job for much longer than we expected. And now the club have got to give themselves a shake. Plenty of time to think about what they want to do. But wow, trying to get that dressing room back on board to try and fight for a top four spot in the Premier League and continue through the group stage of the Champions League itself is going to be very difficult. By the way,
well done, Watford. 4 goals against Manchester United. 2 penalty kicks you don't take. Claudio Ranieri's man. It's kind of been a bit up and down with him, but giving themselves a chance. And outstanding. Way the better team. On the day and was enough to push Ollie over the edge, I'm afraid.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Mm. Let's move on to the big game of the weekend, mate. It was at Anfield. It was Liverpool versus Arsenal. It was a late kickoff on Saturday. I think we're all looking forward to this one in terms of where Liverpool were. An Arsenal team informed, the most informed team in the Premier League, you know, measuring up against one of those top three. And game got competitive early on. I thought that the little tussle on the sideline between Klopp and Arteta raised a bit of blood. In fact, yeah, it almost injected a little bit of something at Liverpool. And in the end, they ran out pretty comfortable 4-0 winners. But wasn't always that easy for Liverpool, you know, till the second half. And where do we see, what do we learn from Arsenal on the day first? Before we talk about Liverpool.
Okay, so I think our preview pod, Rob, middle of last week, we talked about the fascinating matchup with the Liverpool front players and the Arsenal, this young, new Arsenal back four that have been much, much better of late. Could they handle the step up? And that's where they couldn't handle that step up, really, Rob. Yeah. And Liverpool were at their attacking best. Superb goals, superb finishes. Mo Salah, Jota and Mane were the three players playing up front. Thiago has started the game in midfield as well. Yeah. Really, really good. After that first initial, 20 minutes or so?
Yeah, 20 minutes.
Half an hour. They really livened up after the tussle on the sideline. And that kind of was the main thing for me. The back four couldn't handle Liverpool's pace. Defensively better for Liverpool as well. They'll be thrilled with a clean sheet, Rob, given what we've talked about and the way that they've looked a little bit vulnerable. But it was a little reality check's a bit of a strong. It's just like, okay, I wouldn't expect them to go to the home of flipping Anfield and this team and to go toe-to-toe. And for anybody to sort of suggest that, oh, this Arsenal is wrong, is way offline.
Yeah.
This could have been more. Aaron Ramsdale was man of the match. He still lost four goals. That's how good Liverpool are and have been and have taken a long time to get to this point. Arsenal are really at the beginning of trying to build a team that can challenge the title. And it was just one of those days where Liverpool got back to what they were great at and the intensity continued and the football, the attacking play was great. And it was a kind of a just fair result.
Yeah, I'd agree. And I think it's one of those where it's a bit sobering for Arteta and a little bit harsh, as you say, although Ramsdale was excellent in goal and stopped three or four goals. But it's a little sign of where the work's got to be done. I think there is progression. I like the two young guys outside of Lacazette and Aubameyang. I think there's hope there. I think the partnerships at the back will get better. But they've got to realise that there's a step up. And when Liverpool step up, you know, for 20 minutes, the game was in the balance and you're starting to think, Liverpool haven't quite taken control. But this group find a way. This group have been together through some tough things and come out the other side. And I think that's what stands them in better stead at the moment than an Arsenal team that basically Liverpool are a better team. They're better players, they're better coach, they're further down the road in, if we talk about projects. But I just thought it was a little bit of a, that's back to Liverpool, near where they're best when they play with that speed and intensity. Their hunger to win the ball back, Rob, to put you under pressure when you have possession, I thought was outstanding.
I'll add to that, Rob, because we've seen performances before where Liverpool have battered Arsenal. Mm. And the only concern for me a little bit, and I did see that Arteta was asked about this afterwards in an interview, still trying to play out from the back. At Anfield, with the way that they press and the way that they want to keep the game in their opponent's half and push. You know, the mistakes they make like at least two big mistakes for Liverpool goal. Caught playing inside or gets caught on the ball. That's something, and Arteta was asked a really good question. You know, like, have you worked on that? And he's basically saying, Rob, our philosophy is to play out from the back, but we have to realise when it's not working and we try something different. So I hope we don't see that again because that, you know, they were okay. You know, they started the game okay, but as soon as they, you know, the set piece was poor defending as well. So set pieces, mistakes and counterattacks, you know, so there's a class difference, but Arsenal didn't help themselves and have to, I don't know, nip that in the bud. We don't want to keep talking, Rob, about Arsenal trying to play out, getting bogged down, giving the ball away, giving goals away. So that's something they have to work on.
Yeah, absolute learnings. Good to see Trent Alexander-Arnold back to something like his best after, you know, a difficult time. Van Dijk looked like he was on top of his game again. It's going to be interesting for these players now. They've got some Champions League and they've got a good run of league games. Just feel as though Liverpool need this now. Just stick together, get some run of games, you know, get those players all fit and one or two players back in the squad. And they look like they should be in good fettle, get through the Champions League this week, and then they can look forward to getting towards that Christmas and really starting to build up some momentum.
I continue to be impressed with Diogo Jota, Rob. And when he took his goal, I mean, just a classy, composed, calm finish.
Yeah.
I just thought this guy, this young guy, I think, what's he, 24, 25?
24, 20, yeah.
Could really be a big player for Liverpool for many years. You know, like they've had tons of great attacking players.
Yeah.
A tremendous Michael Edwards signing, Rob, that has just fitted in at this club and handled the expectation and pressure of playing at that club so well. Yeah. Took his goal just so classily. I just think that he could be, Roberto Firmino isn't going to last forever. We know he's out with about a hamstring issue right now, but Jota is going to push him. It's going to push him over this season, next couple of seasons. Is definitely the starting number nine. I thought he was superb again.
Yeah, and he brings a little bit of difference. Can good in the air, brings a little bit of clinical finishing.
More of a goal threat, Rob, too, isn't it?
Yeah,
more of a goal threat.
Yeah, and can play a number of positions. So, yeah, good addition, Josh. I think he was missed last season, Rob. He's one of them that wasn't talked about that much, but certainly having him back has been a big lift. Let's talk about Leicester-Chelsea, because, again, I thought all the top teams had kind of games where it could be challenging for them. Chelsea going to Leicester, a Leicester team that weren't in great form, but, you know, with Brendan Rodgers' team, and they beat them in the FA Cup, and they're always up to try and bloody the nose of one of the big sides. I thought, Rob, this game, and I'll obviously get your opinion, was a lesson in focus, preparation and attitude. And I know you mentioned that Jorginho was running the game and Kante was running in, that Chilwell and Reece James were murdering it down the sides, and Hudson-Odoi and Mount were coming and pulling Leicester all over the place. And it was, some of those things were important to how the game played out. But for a team that haven't got Lukaku, who are top of the table, have had players all over the world playing football, they get back together the early kickoff. I just thought their application to what was required was staggering.
I totally agree. Of all the games, and I've watched like five or six in this weekend, I really enjoyed this performance by Chelsea. And my notes reflect it. I thought Chelsea were almost immaculate, Rob. Immaculate for not allowing Leicester's Vardy in behind. From the control gained by those players, Mount and Hudson-Odoi playing between the lines. The combination of Jorginho holding, playmaking from a deeper role, and N'Golo Kante given more license than I think we've seen for maybe under Thomas Tuchel, really given license to get forward and make those runs. The combination of those two are absolutely fantastic. I thought they was classy, as grooved, as impressive I've seen them under Thomas Tuchel. And something, just a little tactical thing, Rob, I picked up, I think it's going to be really interesting, and maybe in our subsequent shows we can look at it a little closer. And it's I noticed it with Reece James when I went back to England and I watched the national team game at Wembley.
Yeah.
Albania 5-0. Reece James is superb. And the wing-backs rolling inside. Now, again, listen, we know that Man City in a back four have done that, where full-backs have rolled right inside into midfield. Yeah. I've never seen it. We've never seen wing-backs do that. Wing-backs are normally high, very wide. And if you have possession, they're pushed on. They're like wingers. But I noticed it in this game for Chelsea. Reece James, in certain situations, Rob, rolls inside from the touchline. Yeah. I tell you what happened when they won the ball back further back, and he became a little outlet for a little dink over the top from Mendy or from Thiago Silva. It's just an interesting, and listen, it's very much in the weeds here, and that's the sort of stuff that I particularly look out for a little bit. It's just interesting, Rob, and it's just a sign of a manager that's just trying to get a player to do more than one thing in his position. Not only wing-backs to get forward, but to play midfield as well. That may be why Kante goes forward so much, Rob, because they've got Reece James at times to roll inside. He'll sometimes play wide and attack and score from the right-hand side. I mean, he's a phenomenal player, Reece James. But you chuck in a little bit of a... whether it's just something he does naturally because he did it for England, whether it's something that he picked up from England. I don't know, but and maybe people think that I've not seen wing backs roll in like that before. So there's so much, Rob, the high pressing, which gave them the territory to dominate Leicester away from home, early kickoff. I could go on all day, Rob, about it. I thought they were, and this is all without Romelu Lukaku.
And Werner.
I mean, again, and this is, again, I'll bring it up quickly, maybe a topic for another day, Rob, or a different one. I'm not saying this is what I believe in, but I'll throw it to you. Do they look better without Lukaku? False nine, rotations, interchange, passing, moving, and take that. I don't. I'm just asking the question.
No.
It changes the way they play. It changes the way they play.
It's a brilliant, really. It's a brilliant alternative stroke plan B. But Lukaku playing well, Rob, at his best, gives him something that we saw early in the season. Yeah. But it's a great shout, and it's a great plan B. And it's a great if we have to rest Lukaku and not play him in every game, we can do another. And it brings me to the point with Tuchel. And it was interesting talking about Reece James. And then I'm thinking about one of others, Hudson-Odoi and Mountainer. He's almost, to play in Thomas Tuchel's team, you have to have versatility, it seems. You can't just be that wide guy who plays out there like a wing-back. You've got to be able to come inside and play with the ball. You've got to sometimes be a defensive player. And I just wonder, I want to move it on to Christian Pulisic, who came on as sub and scored in the second half. And the game might have been slightly heading in Chelsea's favour then, but important that he comes on, Pulisic. Important that he makes a note. Important that he keeps reminding the manager. Could his role be that, very much that, Rob? The coming on as a sub, make things? Or could he become a wing-back? Could he be coached into the wing-back role?
No, I don't like that for him, Rob. Don't like it for him.
Let me put this in there. Where does he get into this team? Or does he?
Yeah, well, he's got Hudson-Odoi. The two behind the striker. And we could argue, and our producer, Jorge, kind of liked when he came on. He was kind of central and maybe a false nine. I mean, Havertz can play in any of those roles, the highest nine or the two little number 10s in behind that Mount and Hudson-Odoi played in this game. Pulisic can play in any of those three roles. I absolutely would want to see him there more than the wing back. Absolutely, Rob. You know, he played there a couple of times, didn't he? And I'm watching him track all the way back, trying to, you know, tackle, defend, track runners. That's really not his game. He is sharp. He is skillful. He is clever. I think the sub thing, you know, he won't thank me for saying it, really suits him because he's quick and he brings that speed into a game late where it is super difficult to pick up. Could have scored more than one goal that he did in this game. But no, the front three, Rob, is where it's ideal for him. But there's many other players. I mean, the strength of the squad, Rob, is that something else I noted. No Azpilicueta, no Lukaku, no Werner. I mean, there's the midfield players. They've got Loftus-Cheek. They've got Kovacic to come back. The central defenders, Trevor Chalobah. Thiago Silva looks a million bucks. And by the way, side note, Thiago Silva never stops talking. Never stops talking. Oh, absolutely never stops organising and talking, apart from the abilities that he's got with the ball.
There was a brilliant moment in the first half when Vardy got played over the top and it was he had a one-on-one with Thiago Silva. Thiago Silva went as if he was going to make a tackle and just backed off. And he almost unearthed Vardy because Vardy wants you to jump in and he's going to skip past you. And Silva, like, as if he's going to go and dropped off. And it was immaculate. It was like Virgil van Dijk, like, defending. It was like, I've seen that. I've seen your type before. And you're not going to run me. You're not having a race. And it was just brilliant defending. Just totally disarmed Jamie Vardy on the edge of the box.
One other player, Rob, I definitely want to mention, and it was very close to my underappreciated. He's probably had it before. Antonio Rudiger. He gets that first goal. It's a brilliant header, by the way. It's a brilliant header. And I thought the way that you broke it down was excellent on our show, where he starts on the goalkeeper and just moves away from him. It's one end. The goalkeeper doesn't want a defender there. So there's no defender watching him. He moves into the space. You know, we know his contract's up. The manager was asked about it afterwards, and he said, I love him to bits. I want him to stay. Rudiger's really, really playing his hand here, Rob. I mean, why would he want to move anywhere else?
You've got to pay him, haven't you? You're going to have to pay him some big bucks. He looks important, doesn't he? He looks important.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, so
Plenty of love for Chelsea. Great performance, as you say, kicking off and sitting top of the table. Important game against Juve there, coming in the week in the Champions League. I think a draw, win or draw in the through to the next stage. Let's move on to Man City. I don't think there's that much more we can talk about Man City. Man City v Everton was probably everything you think Man City Everton was going to be. City had dominate possession. City created chances. In the end, City got the goals. Two beautiful goals, the first and second. End up getting a third against an Everton team that sat deep, that lost Amari Gray, that didn't have a lot of threat. And in the end, it was a bit of a sad performance from Rafa's men.
It ended up being a sad performance, Rob. But to be fair, at the beginning, you know, it was a very strong, deep 4-5-1. And they kept Man City at bay. And I did think, is this one of those games? Is this one of those games that City don't quite find a way through? The Sterling, it was a mistake, wasn't it? Was it what the first goal? I'm just trying to think the first goal.
First goal was
Sterling scored right before halftime.
Cancelo ball to Sterling.
Oh,
I mean, the ball, by the way.
Jeez.
I mean, you could have a podcast on that ball. I mean, really? As you saw it from behind the camera, I was sitting with Tim and I said, let me tell you something, Tim, how good that ball is. I haven't even seen that pass when he took the touch. I couldn't see it. I'm thinking, like, where's he going to hit this?
And the way he put the ball between his feet, that's what he was thinking. Mm. It was a superb season best. I mean, I'd be surprised if we see a better ball than that, a final ball, a through ball, a cross, an assist, whatever you want to say, to hit that ball with that accuracy with the outside of his right foot from that kind of angle. It wasn't a great angle. No. And the weight, I mean, everything about it, the weight, the curl. Mm. I mean, Sterling did a great job as well, opening his foot up and half volley it past him. But what a ball that was. Absolutely sensational. Of course, with City, once they get the first goal, then they're in total control. A great strike from Rodri again. More quality, Rob. I just thought that quality is what City can throw at you. Apart from the way that the team works with tactical and the synergy from the pressing and everything else, the quality is there as well when they need it. So, again, City are fantastic. The young kid, Rob. The young.
Want to
kid,
talk
Cole
about
Palmer.
Cole Palmer? Yeah, I wanted to talk about him, mate. I did a little breakdown on him after the game, and we got clips. And 19 years of age, been at the academy since he was 8. He's a Manchester boy. He's a Man City fan. I just think it's so important that this football club keep bringing these kids through. He's Foden-esque in the left foot, in the balance, in the grace, in the head on the turn, finding space. Pep mate did an interview after. I don't know if you heard it. It was really good about talking about, listen, he says, we're not just going to put kids in from Manchester because it kind of ticks a box. You earn a right to be in my team. And he said, this kid has earned his right. And he said, McAtee, the other kid who's there, I think Liam Delap is another. He says, we've got a bit of a conveyor belt of them coming through. And that's 10 years of work that we've heard about, you know, everybody in England sending the kids to the Man City Academy. Because they're starting to see the benefit of it now. And this young kid, Rob, I thought he would probably play from the right-hand side and be coming in on his left foot and that. To give him the false nine spot, Rob, in a big Premier League game, I thought was brave and shows the trust that Pep has in him.
He hinted at that, Rob, in his pre-match interview. Mm. If you remember, he talked about, maybe you might have missed that, but he talked about really good in small spaces, which is what he often wants him as number nine, where in the box he can.
Yeah.
And I thought, maybe he is going to play him as that central player.
Central one.
He looks silky. Silky left-footed player. I mean, James McAtee came on, another 19-year-old.
Same one, isn't he?
Still, silky left-foot players.
They're
pulling them out of the academy. It's incredible. And I just thought Palmer looked really, really good. Through balls. Like, looks to get on the ball. Looks to shoot. I mean, it's another impressive performance by this team that is not struggling right now with the false nine. They look $1 million, and of all the teams that we've seen, of course, this weekend, the three big boys, we think, Rob, are going to finish one, two, and three. We thought that might be a challenge with United, but that's obviously gone away now. Just after this weekend, Rob, because they did have similar games this weekend against kind of decent sides. Mm. Who was the most impressive for you?
Well, I went into the weekend, Rob, thinking all these teams couldn't be a bit vulnerable, really. Like Chelsea, maybe with goals without Lukaku.
Yeah.
City no striker, the usual, like, where the goal's going to come from midfield. Liverpool, been a bit careless defensively. You know, if they get held by, you know, if they can hold their attack, is the ways we can hurt them defensively. And so the long answer to your question is, would be Chelsea, based on what I saw. Would be Chelsea. I'll tell you what else with Chelsea, and I think, what's their goal difference now? Goals against, -4, Rob. I think it's important. One of the things, I was doing a little bit of work before the game, research on Friday. One of the big things about Chelsea is their, you know, the XG expected goals. Well, there's an XG expected goals against. So what you concede, they're way top of that league, by the way.
Yeah, I know.
So they're controlling the opposition with the chances they're having. That's the thing that's impressing me more than any. Liverpool look like there'll be the odd loose day where they might concede 2 or 3. And Man City looks like the odd day when they might not score enough goals. Chelsea look like they're controlling things at their end.
Yeah, I think all of them are looking absolutely superb this season, but they have got little issues. And that win for Chelsea, like their issue that might struggle to score when Lukaku's not there. You've got players coming back from injury. Now, Pulisic, of course, being the main one. Mount is back from injuries. He was injured a little while back. I'm the same as you after this weekend. I just thought that they look so grooved and so solid. Closely followed by Man City, Rob. They are, and I know that I've got my reservations. I tipped Chelsea over City to win it. City also, like, are a machine. They're a machine. And
Phil Foden. No De Bruyne, was it, today? No Diaz, no De Bruyne. No De Bruyne.
They're a strong squad as well. So I'm not sure we've seen this strong bit of big boys.
Big,
I know,
three,
United
have
dropped off, but there's the big, a three in a Premier League season in these three. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we can go back and think about that. But that, but the three of them, particularly this weekend, looked like they're ready to win the title. But I think Chelsea just pipped it for me. And Leicester, difficult game away from home. Absolutely, almost perfect.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Let's turn it to a man who got a perfect end to the day. Didn't start particularly that well. Antonio Conte, his first home game, Premier League home game in charge of Tottenham. They went 1-0 down to Leeds, but second half, much better performance, more aggressive, certainly more front foot, and got themselves a goal. They got the win. Harry didn't get himself a goal, but Conte, I think, will have liked some of the things he saw setting off. And certainly, I think the Tottenham fans are going to love Antonio Conte.
Yeah. I mean, what fans don't want a fired-up manager? And I know that everybody's a little different. And you know, we saw a huge contrast, of course, Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to the way that Conte handles himself. But not just that, Rob, which a lot of that is for show. And it's like, you know, whatever, great. I like it. It's entertaining. But what he did at halftime is why he's there. And why he's a winner, and why he's a special manager, and why Man United should have got him, and why he's won done tremendously well wherever he's been. You know, the words that the difference in intensity, and I know there's some tactical tweaks that were very minor, by the way. Because one thing about this performance from Spurs was that the shape of the team pretty much remained unchanged. And I think you're going to see that. I think he wants to groove it. I think he doesn't want to make changes and go to back four and change. I think he wants to groove a system so the players are comfortable. Dele Alli goes in on a right side of midfield, the right forward line. Yeah. It was kind of like for like. And I know they might have been a little bit more in the faces of their opponents, one-on-one, I think he described it. But the intensity and the just the flipping work ethic was so different. And that was enough to change the flow of the game. Yeah. Sometimes it's that simple, Rob. Mm. And sometimes we all, us included, coaches and analysts, think, oh, I've got to change this, got to bring a hold in the field player in there, got to try throw it at the back. And sometimes that's correct. But mostly, give the lads a kick up the ass, get them fired up, get them into the faces. And maybe, you know, when you're 1-0 down, you're coming into the second half. Maybe it happens naturally. But look how powerful extra effort is.
And
intensity, it totally switched the game. And and then they go on, they control the game. I thought Harry Kane looks so much more interested, looks a little sharper, almost scored, hit the post with a shot that kind of went through the goalkeeper and deflected onto the post. It's going to be a fascinating ride. Mm. And I'm sat there after half an hour, like, yeah, wow, this is a tough job for Conte. These players are struggling to come to terms with what he wants. It's going to take time to groove it, and it will take time to groove it. But what he can do right now, and we saw a great example, is just that. Is the motivation, is the intensity, and the fight, you know, the flipping passion that he brings to the players and also into the stands and getting the fans going. Fair play. Just thought it was an amazing turnaround.
It's funny, isn't it? You talk about coaching and styles and, you know, the false nine. Is that going to become a thing? And we'll maybe talk about it. That bit after a game, Rob, when he's hugging and grabbing Tanganga and that, is part of coaching now. It's part of saying to your players, we've got something going here. Let's take this on. Like, that's done purposely. That's done for a reason. And and you almost see the players waiting for their hug, like, I want to be part of this. And that's what he's got. That's what he brings. There's a, I thought the biggest, despite what he did on the pitch today, and you mentioned it at the top of the show when we talked about Ollie, there was a time, was it 75 minutes, where he got the fans going, Rob, and he wasn't just happy that they're singing. He got them going again
and again. He kept going.
Like, come on, you got to do your bit and you get behind us and we'll do our bit on the pitch. And I just thought to myself, this is a football club we've said since Poch has left and things weren't going then. It's been a bit rudderless. I know Mourinho came in, it didn't work, and then Mason was in and what. It's got a leader now, Rob. It's got identity, it's got a leader, and it's got some thing, somebody who will drag it to where it needs to be. Now, if the support's there and the fans get behind it, there could be some exciting times ahead for Tottenham, because there's still a decent enough group there. And with these starts to add it, whether it's January or the summer window, when I think they'll do more business, they could start to be serious.
Yeah, I thought he said some really interesting words, Rob. I think actually before the game, and maybe after the last game, where he said he wants a stable Tottenham, not up or down. He wants stable. So I think that's where you're going to see a consistent system. That's why, mentality-wise, he doesn't want them going from euphoric and confident and cocky to flipping, you know, just maybe complacent, arrogant. He wants that focus and that drive all the time. And we all know what Spurs have been called over the years and how they're kind of a bit flaky and Spursy, as they've described. He is the one guy that you could bring in to try and change that mentality. And I just thought that stable, not up and not down all the time, is what I think you're going to see. He's going to take his time and bring in other players. Sessegnon came in, didn't he? The left wing back for Reguilón, who scores that winning goal. And there will be changes. Dele, of course, came in as well. I thought Winks did okay alongside Højbjerg in midfield in place of Skip. It's just going to be, as I knew it would be, a really interesting, fascinating period of Spurs, where they've got a guy that has done nothing but win. And, you know, he's going to shake the club a little bit. But I thought today was a really important, you know, that gets the fans believing a little bit, Rob, you know.
Yes,
it was a blooming awkward game for them. It was an awkward game.
Yeah.
When you're trying to sort your system out, you're trying to groove a new, and you've got blooming leads coming that are all over the place. It's... it was an awkward game for him.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I was doing my notes just finally on this one. I was looking at the two teams. I'm thinking similar managers in terms of intensity, what they want to play. But Conte wants to do it from a structure. Bielsa is a little bit more fluid and a little bit more, you know, combinations and rotations in what he does. Just looking at the game as it was, Rob, and I'm just looking at the table now. And Leeds have played, was it 12 games now, 11 points? Just above the bottom three. I don't know if you heard a interview with Phillips after the game.
I did.
And there was a couple of answers. And Beck said after, I'm going to have to ask you this because I just want to get your opinion as it was run out about Calvin Phillips' responses to one about his positional play, where he was playing a little bit deeper as a three.
He's playing centre-back.
Went to deal with Kane because I think they wanted him to go with Kane.
He did pretty well with him.
Yeah, and certainly first off, played really well. And then the second question was around the team and something like maybe what's going wrong. And he kind of did it and didn't seemed like he wanted to answer the question. And Bex was saying to me, is that a little sign of something maybe behind the scenes? Is something with the players? And I'm not saying Bex, was forcing me down a road. But it did beg the question, could there be people in that dressing room, Rob, who had just lost a little bit of belief
in what's been done? Maybe. I think it was more pointed at the second half, and he talked about game management.
Rob.
And, you know, whether I think he said in his own words, we should lump it a little bit sometimes and not try and... So in effect, it is kind of questioning the manager's kind of philosophy a little bit. Mm. That being said, they didn't have to play well first half. They didn't have to play... And without Patrick Bamford, without Rafinha, without Rodrigo, that some of the more important attacking
Luke
players...
Luke Ayling, I think, as well at the back is
Luke Ayling. So they are missing some...
And this isn't great. I didn't want to make a big thing of it, but I just thought it was interesting. And it might just be something to... You know, keep an eye around, because as we've known with this team, they've done brilliant things last season. Things aren't quite going so well, and it'd be interesting to see how a great manager like Bielsa deals with it and gets them through difficult times. Obviously, as players come back, I'm sure things will pick up. But, you know, they need to get some points pretty quickly because they're not in a particularly great position.
And any time a player hints at some sort of dissatisfaction with what I mean, it's just not a good. I didn't think he quite honest. I mean, we love honesty from players, but I thought it just gave a little hint of people will jump on that a little bit and start questioning, like, oh, even the players are thinking about certain situations. So,
now, I'm just going out. Yeah. I don't particularly think there is, but I just think it's just one of those things to keep an eye over. As things,
I think they've got to stick together for me. The team, the club, they've got to stick together. Yeah. They get the players back. There's 26 odd games to go. Yeah,
way too good for what's coming. Let's talk about the Premier League debut for a manager, Stevie G. I think we all had anticipation about this one. I think we both thought it's a good fit. We both feel it's the right kind of club and the right kind of opportunity. And they got off to the right start, my friend.
They did. I mean, I this is the window that I watched Man United, because the story was happening very quickly. So I didn't see the intricacy of it. I saw the system. I saw the 4-3-3. I kind of like Watkins. I know that Dean Smith always wanted Watkins to play up front with Danny Ings. But as we said on the last pod, Gerrard's more of a 4-3-3 guy. Yeah. I kind of like the lineup, Rob. I went back and looked at the highlights and the goals and the system that they played. Yeah. I mean, on paper, it still looks a pretty good team. Mings is back in there. The fullbacks are good fullbacks. Matty Cash, I think, is a really good fullback. Yeah. McGinn from that little number eight position can do a really good job there. Douglas Luiz is to come back and be the holding player is better than Marvis Nakamba, in my opinion. Yeah. So I kind of like it. And Watkins, I'm sure he'd probably rather be a striker, Rob. But in that system, he is the one who's going to have to push out to the left-hand side. I mean, it's just great for Steven Gerrard to win that first game. We all know, you know, what it means, and it stays with fans when you come into that home game and win the match. Brighton are an awkward opponent. Great start for Steven Gerrard, and the way he speaks, we both agree that he speaks really well, and he's calm, and he's measured, and he's thoughtful. But you have got to get out and do it. I watched the highlights and stuff and the goals. And I mean, he's fired up as well, isn't he?
Yeah,
a little surprised, like how
fired up
into it he was. Yeah. But great to see.
Well, I think that's one of the things that stands him in the stead. He's into it. I think that's a really good thing. He looks like he's all in. He was all in as a player, and he looks like he's all in as a manager. He looks like he wants to do whatever's required to be a top class manager. Yeah. And I think that's brilliant, because we know some who want to take shortcuts to being the top-class man, who like all the great things, but don't want to do the hard, dirty yards. I think Steven Gerrard's completely the opposite. I think he wants to do everything that's going to give him the best chance. And I think the clean sheet was important. It's a team that's leaked too many goals. I think 20 goals that they'd leaked to already. So that clean sheet was a good base. Lovely finish by Watkins. Mings, I think, you know, goal for him. And the way that the goal came, sort of kept the ball in and got his finish, you know, will do him no harm after maybe his confidence being knocked a bit under Dean Smith. So great start for Stevie G, just exactly what he would have wanted against a difficult Brighton team. We'll see how that one continues. Where are they next week? Villa or next week at Villa or at Crystal Palace? So two Premier League legends going face to face. It'll be Patrick Vieira versus Steven Gerrard, Palace v. Aston Villa. So good game to look forward to on Saturday. I'm going to move it on to a couple more games, mate. We'll just round up. Norwich 2, Southampton 1. Dean Smith in his Premier League debut for Norwich. And I believe, so I didn't, Rebecca told me that Dean Smith was apparently in Central Park riding around with his
wife. I heard that. Didn't give me a call, did he? Miserable git. Didn't phone me.
He obviously moved on from you, my friend.
He moved on from me.
But, yeah, he got the call. He went back to England. Apparently his wife said she wouldn't have minded having 6 months of seeing a few cities and that. But we talked about him getting himself back in. It felt the right fit. His team had won last week against Brentford and then the manager got sacked. His team won in the end against Southampton this time and got all 3 points. And a little bit of hope for Dean Smith, a little bit of belief in the club. I tell you what, I saw a package yesterday on Billy Gilmore during the game, Robbie Musto. Obviously, Dean Smith found a way to get him in the team, Daniel Farke didn't. It was excellent, mate. Excellent. Ran the game.
Yeah, I just don't get that. I don't know what happened. I don't know why he wasn't more involved. They see Todd Cantwell start the game as well, Rob.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, if you're Norwich City, you've got to get your best players out there, figure out a system which works for these, and get your best players on the pitch. And I know, listen, we don't know the ins and outs. Yeah, it's impossible for us to know every 20 clubs at flipping 500 players, you know, of who's on, you know. It's just of what we see.
Yeah, it's the outside looking in. It's like,
right. Yeah, that why isn't Gilmore playing and why isn't Cantwell playing? I know Cantwell's had some personal issues, there's some fitness issues, but I mean, they got a chance, absolutely got a chance. It's a tremendous start for him, really great start. Southampton have been playing well. They're not an easy team to play against, whether they press and the way that Norwich play, you think would be a good matchup for Southampton, but maybe Dean Smith, you know, we'll take a close look in subsequent weeks when we have them as our main game. But just on the result and the goals and the lineup, wow. You know, they won a game. I mean, it's well done. Well done, Dean Smith.
I want to take this moment, my friend, for your dear friend, Dean Smith, who didn't contact you while he was in Central Park, to be my underappreciated performer of the week. I just feel that five defeats for Villa was a little bit premature, that he lost his job at Aston Villa. I think all the talk and most of the talk was, well, it's a good fit for Norwich because when they go down, everybody knows a championship. And it's a bit like, oh, give this guy a chance. Him and Craig Shakespeare have got a really good thing going. Experienced coaches, know the league. Craig Shakespeare has been involved with a team that's won the Premier League. And there's talent down there, Rob. These better players than we've seen. And as you've talked, you know, getting your best players on the pitch, finding a system that makes them work. Dean Smith said at halftime he got into them a little bit because he didn't like what he saw in the first half. They were better in the second. And I just feel that this guy deserves a bit more appreciation of what he can do. And that he can do. And that he can stay in the Premier League and he can be a manager in here. And he's almost going to have to do what Sean Dyche did. Keep a team in there and show that each year he can. And now Sean Dyche is like, you know, bulletproof. Yeah, Sean Dyche can keep a team in the league. Dean Smith hasn't got there yet. And I hope this Norwich job gives him the opportunity to do that.
Yeah. And just, you know, new manager bounce, belief from the players that they actually have a chance is massive. Massive right now. And listen, you know, it might over the next 3 or 4 weeks, they might struggle again. But right now, they'll believe they can win games, stay in the division. Those players will believe right now, given new hope, new manager, new ideas. Farke has been there a long time. That's the same message, Rob, for a long time.
Yeah,
and now a new guy has gone in and winning that first game, it really is really, really important. Whether they've got enough quality week in, week out, we'll have to wait and see. Yeah. Obviously, it helps, as we said, to get the best players in the team, which he's done. And they got the rewards. Great 3 points.
Absolutely. Move it on to Wolves versus West Ham. I suppose this was the game that we always thought was coming with West Ham. Interesting, no Ogbonna, Craig Dawson out for, looks like, the season. Craig Dawson came in at the back, and I don't know if that slightly affected things. But we have to say, it's a very good Wolves team at the moment, in good form, Bruno Lage. Daniel Pedence was back in the team. He was light and lively. And Raul Jimenez with a lovely finish, sweeping finish. I said to Bex, feels like normal service resumed for Wolves. Playing decent on a bit of form, and Jimenez getting goals.
Listen, Rob, there, I look at the league table. They are sixth place right now, above Man United and above Tottenham, after a really slow and a tough start. Yeah. Like Bruno Lage, and I know maybe we're going to, this is going to change each few weeks. We could talk about, you know, whether it's West Ham or whether it's Brighton with Potter being in the top four. Yeah. You know, right now, Wolves deserve the kudos and deserve the credit, because the football that they play is really, really great. And I always say it's harder to coach an expansive attacking style than a defensive one, than a counter-attacking one, in my opinion. It's harder to. And to somebody that does that and to entertain the fans like that at home against this team at West Ham that is so good without the ball and are doing great, flipping it. It's a great result. It's a really, really great result. And a sneaky good season for them. Wolves right now, sixth place, just 1 point behind Arsenal in fifth place. So great result. Absolutely fantastic result.
Let's finish off with, there was 2-3-3s. There was a Burnley 3, Crystal Palace 3. Plenty of goals in that one. Don't think we expected that. Sean Dyche's men coming back in the end to 3-2. Christian Benteke getting a couple of goals. Conor Gallagher back in form, but 3-3 in that one. The other 3-3, my friend, was Newcastle 3, Brentford 3.
Here we go, mate.
I think we all had an eye on this because it was supposedly Eddie Howe's first game in charge of Newcastle, which I suppose was, but Eddie Howe came out with COVID test on the Friday evening. We believe that meant he had to isolate, so he was in a hotel room, and we believe FaceTiming his players and his coaching staff. It's almost like typical Newcastle, isn't it? There's always going to be something. How will Eddie feel with a 3-3 draw at home to Brentford?
I actually think he'll be quite pleased. Mm. I mean, of course, he doesn't want to concede three goals every week, but the ability for his team to create and score goals is going to be really, really important. The defensive side of it, and we'll see, because I'm not going to say that he's going to do a ton of work on that, because that's not what he does, but at least it shows his team can score goals. Mm. I look at his lineup, Rob, and I think it is going to be the three at the back and the four across the middle and the three at front. It's the way he's going to go, 3-4-3. Again, a front three of Saint-Maximin, Callum Wilson and Joe Ellington looks like it could do well. I like Jacob Murphy and Matt Ritchie in the wing-back spots, and he's talked a lot about Jonjo Shelvey, Rob, which is so typical of him, where he is going to put his trust in a player that can be superb and can control game. His passing range is phenomenal. And Eddie Howe's already said, like, wow, I'm even surprised when I see him in training how talented he is. Again, but he's not good defensively, and he won't help you defensively. And it's Joe Willock that played alongside Shelvey, which again is a player that is at his best going forward. So the scoreline, I look at the lineups, I'm like, I'm not surprised given this lineup. So I guess this is the way it's going to be. They are banging trouble, mate, aren't they? They're banging trouble. Yeah. Bottom of the table, five points to win.
Only team without a win in the Premier League. I mean, it's got to start happening soon, hasn't it? I mean, we can all talk about January in the window and bringing people in, but I mean, got to get some, get a few results pretty quickly.
And he also talked about a player, Robert. I nearly spat out my breakfast cereal when I listened to it. And it talked about the qualities of a certain Joe Ellington. And that Joe Ellington almost he's got great feet and he's going to be a really important player. So my underappreciated performer, maybe from me, from you, from everybody, for a long time, we underappreciated Joe Ellington. First goal under his time with Eddie Howe in the Premier League.
I mean, I'm giving a round of applause for that one.
I know, because I feel a bit, I don't know, I don't know how I feel about it, but I'm going to give it
a striker who doesn't score goals, basically.
Yeah, but he started scoring, and maybe all along, we have underappreciated what he can do. Eddie Howe is a far smarter guy than we are, my friend, and he says he's really impressed with his abilities. We haven't seen it. Let's be honest about it. We have not seen it. For a big transfer fee, playing in different spots, missed terrible opportunities, but he took his goal really well. Great first touch, smashes it in with his left foot for the second touch. Maybe all along, we've underappreciated Joe Ellington. We'll see. We'll see the future, Eddie Howe. But I just think it's going to be exciting. And this league has got enough fun stuff going on. Newcastle's, I mean, almost gung-ho approach to the end to now to try and play the way out of relegation is going to be fascinating.
Great watch.
Because I don't know, has there ever been a team that's been in this position and played their way with a flamboyant attacking style out of trouble? There haven't been many. There hasn't been many. We'll see if he can do it.
He's got to get his defence right first. Like you say, scoring three is great, but conceding three, I think it's 27 they've conceded now in the 12 games, is a little bit of work to do for Eddie there. Let's wrap it up, mate, on a weekend when a 4-1 loss to Watford was enough to tip Ollie over the edge. He lost his job today, and looks like Michael Carrick's going to be in charge for at least a week, and then we'll kind of see what happens, which is a bit like the United way. We'll be back on Wednesday, November 24th. We'll recap an important couple of nights of Champions League football, not least Manchester United. They go away to Villarreal on Tuesday. That's a really big game. And Man City hosting PSG, and Pochettino back in Manchester. Look, I can start you there. But for now, I'm Earl. He's Musty, together with two Robbies. Thanks for watching and listening. Be safe, stay healthy. It's a good night from me.
And it's good night from him. Good night. Good night.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.